Hi there, I'm Kevin McManus, Chief Excellence Officer with Great Systems, and I'd like to thank you for taking the time to listen to my first LinkedIn article, Best Practices to Stay Union Free, or Attract One, it's your choice. During my life, I've worked in and for both organized and union-free companies. In some cases, we had some organized sites and others that were not. With all the labor organization efforts going on today, I thought I would share my best practices to stay union-free. Plus, these are simply best practices for leading any workforce. My perspective has always been that if a company has a union in-house, at some point in time, the company deserved one. Current management may lead in a much more positive way, but mental models from past negative interactions still exist. It's a challenge to undo 20-plus years of bad management with just a few years of good management attempts. I know, I've been there. Like it or not, if you choose to continue and manage in a manner that could be perceived as even a bit authoritarian, entitled, non-inclusive, or unfair, a union could be in your future. I've learned that the following practices are effective in any workplace setting, be it organized or union-free. My first two experiences in organized workplaces. I can't take all the credit for the best practices I share here by any means. Each of my first two employers was organized, with one union being small and the other being the United Auto Workers. As a fresh out of university industrial engineer, I saw little difference in terms of how the union's presence affected the performances of a given site. Both locals would file the same flavor mix of grievances: working hours, safety concerns, wage rate versus seniority, bid job rights, etc. There did not seem to be any significant difference in work rules or work practices. People could be happy or happy. It almost depended on which department you were in. Such happiness seemed to be driven mainly by where they worked and who they worked for, not by the union's presence. Both sites had improvement teams, but only a small percentage of the workforce was involved. By the turn of the century, both companies were out of business. Most people simply came to work each day, did their jobs, and went home. Learning how to design work to stay union-free. My third employer was not organized. Such a status did not figure in my job selection process, but the 5 years I spent in that environment dramatically affected my career path. On an annual basis, we would have a lawyer from back east come in and teach us about how to stay union-free. It was all legit and legal from a labor relations standpoint. We made rubber roofing in a part of the country that had a strong United Rubber Workers presence. Mr. Martin Payson with Jackson Lewis LLP taught those workshops. Mr. Payson went on to be a strong opponent of the Employee Free Choice Act. He felt that the act represented a fundamental attack on the principles of democracy, informed decision-making, and the secret ballot. He taught us that if we create workplaces that people want to be a part of and feel respected in, there is no need for a union. If leaders consistently hear and validate each staff member's voice, there's no need for shop stewards. However, those are big ifs. Even more labor experiences. My fourth employer had the most challenging union environment of them all. On top of that, I was the production manager. Fortunately, we had a plant manager, business agent, and chief steward who were committed to building a stronger labor management partnership. Unfortunately, the company was sold before we could complete our transitional journey. Plus, I've worked with multiple organizations that are hybrids in terms of a labor presence. In this model, some sites are organized and some are not. If your organization has multiple sites in different states, the need for consistent union-free practices is high. This is true whether a given site is organized or not. I've worked in organized workplaces more than non-union workplaces. An organized workplace can be pleasant and productive. That said, most leaders rightfully argue that some scheduling flexibility is lost. Conversely, leaders must invest time and money to maintain a union-free status, as the prevailing system of management often still leans towards the autocratic side. However, it has been consistently my experience that if you effectively engage your people in meaningful change, you will reduce waste and increase profits. However, such success requires trust in each other, Leaders can generate such trust in either a unionized or a union-free setting. Here are my union-free best practices, or you can use them to attract unions if you choose not to follow them. The choice is yours. Stay union-free best practice number one, relationships matter the most. When it comes to minimizing the potential for labor organization in a workplace, relationship quality matters most. Without sound relationships, trust is low. When trust is low, people begin to question their job security and the fairness of work. How often do you think about relationship quality at work? Unfortunately, too many leaders view relationships as being nice to have at best in the world of work. Covey's emotional bank account concept provides a quick means of assessing relationship quality on the workplace. The key is that each work team leader, regardless of leadership level, works to consistently build strong relationships with their teams. What percent of your staff do you have a positive emotional account balance with? What percent fall into the negative balance category? Can you think of negative events or withdrawals that helped create such debt? How often do you make efforts to make deposits in the emotional bank accounts of your team members? Stay union-free best practice number two, be fair. Opportunities for people to be fair with each other occur every day in the workplace. Effective teamwork, in the most basic sense, is nothing more than people being fair in terms of sharing the workload. Each leader must decide, am I making a fair choice or not? Each leader decision must consider the fairness element. That said, favoritism remains a common workplace challenge. Fairness is often most viewed through a who gets to do what work for what hours and pay lens. Plus, people consider job flexibility when they can take personal time, even if just for 15 minutes. My experience has been that a lack of communication about job expectation often heads the list of fairness concern causes. Similarly, pay rates often lead the list of unfair compensation topics. However, other elements of the compensation package are often more one-sided than the pay differences that exist. Leaders should view all elements of the compensation package through a fairness lens. After all, that's what their people do every day. Finally, be transparent as to how work is measured and as to how allowances are made. Stay union-free best practice number three, be both honest and transparent. The two words have different meanings, even though some people use them interchangeably. To be honest is to tell the truth. To be transparent is to share a complete and accurate set of information so understanding exists. Management decisions provide perhaps the best opportunity to practice both behaviors. Unfortunately, some managers flat out lie. Others simply fail to share all the key facts with you. Both are bad practices. For starters, be honest. White lies don't work in the world of work. The social media grapevine can defeat any corporate spin machine. Misinformation and misrepresentation are strong dissatisfiers these days to most workforce demographics. In society, we can walk away from or turn off such nonsense. In the workplace, however, we often live with its effects and after effects every day. As Covey taught me, trust is built through character and competency demonstration. Be honest. Has anyone ever said to you that certain information was need to know or above your pay grade? How often do you wonder how management makes the decisions they make? People challenge transparent decision-making processes to a much lesser degree than those that occur behind closed doors. I mean, how do you feel when someone says, well, we need to talk about something in a little more detail, Kevin. Why don't you leave the room? Wow. Do your people ask you why they need to do work a certain way? If so, you probably need to make transparency improvements. Stay union-free best practice number four. Be inclusive. The data speaks for itself. One demographic segment tends to dominate the leadership ranks in most organizations, whether it's right or not. This is a sign of tradition, not true potential. It's a sign of tradition, not the future. Change is in process, but I suspect it will require another generation of time, 20 years or so, to complete the transition. Even then, many smaller, more rural workplaces will still be just starting to shift. Please appreciate the value that diversity brings to your workplace. Ask, listen, learn. I grew up in the rural South in the 1960s. Fortunately, the two ethnic groups in our community seemed to get along pretty well, in spite of the obvious segregation and economic differences. That said, inclusiveness was not a workplace goal back then. Also, I came to learn that two ethnic groups on a team is not truly that diverse. In my last full-time plant manager job, people from 10 different countries made up our operations team alone. It was the best workforce I'd ever been a part of, and I'd worked with some great ones before I'd come across these folks. Our diversity contributed to our creativity and camaraderie. As we doubled in size as an organization, our team understood why we had to work some strange schedules, because they were kept informed and involved. Everyone is good at something, and if you appreciate the diversity in your organization, if you design your work systems to engage people to bring out the creativity and the power that comes with that diversity, you will excel as an organization. Stay union-free best practice number 5, practice consistent, meaningful engagement. Relationships cannot be developed, let alone nurtured, without consistent, meaningful engagement. Engagement factors provide the focus area for connecting with staff on a regular basis. Unfortunately, few organizations measure engagement at all, let alone identify engagement factors. Formally identify key engagement factors for your different demographic groups. More importantly, provide a variety of ways for people to engage. Not everyone wants to be on an improvement team or go to a team meeting. Some folks prefer regular text notifications with links. Others prefer face-to-face messaging. Almost all staff prefer regular versus spotty opportunities to learn and share. With social media, it's easy to set up interest groups that allow plenty of chances for asynchronous but meaningful engagement. Use multiple means to measure engagement as well on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis. Assess your existing engagement processes. Also, work with your people to further enhance engagement approach design and execution. Most importantly, formally review and refresh your engagement approaches on at least an annual basis. Stay union-free best practice number 6. Appreciate the need for and promote work-life balance. People have dreamed of a better work-life balance long before it became the hot topic and necessary topic it is today. From a management perspective, it is often the biggest gripe. We don't get paid from overtime work, even though our boss expects it. In many cases, to put job ahead of family means you're a loyal employee and worthy of promotion. In some cases, even to this day, 80-hour weeks are still the norm. The greatest mistake I see leaders make is to blindside their people with changes in work hours. Worse yet, some people receive discipline when they fail to show following such adjustments, even when their boss failed to inform them of the change. People lead busy lives, and yes, some may overextend themselves. Some have to overextend themselves to get by. That said, it's their choice. They're right. We must respect that. When a leader appreciates the away-from-work demands of their team, it makes a huge difference in relationship quality. Ideally, the organization should clearly define work hour boundaries. The waste reduction one gains from fatigue minimization alone often makes the change worth it, even before other benefits from lower stress and greater focus come along. Stay union-free best practice number 7. Play the great game of business. I learned to practice the great game of business a few years before Jack Stack published his book by that name. Open book management began in the early 1990s when Jack Stack used it to help turn around the Springfield remanufacturing facility in Missouri. Get the information out there is a key open book management first step to take. Plus, it's one great way to help stay transparent and in turn, union free. Performance reviews, Pre-job huddles and improvement teams are three elements of open book management. More importantly, these techniques help empower others and build ownership relative to daily process performance and improvement. As time progresses, you may want to teach your people about how the organization makes and loses money. Profit and Cash by John Schuster was a springboard for that. Such a business literacy extension goes beyond a simple understanding of one's daily process costs. You don't have to share exact costs or proprietary information. Simply sharing percentages, rounded numbers, that goes a long way towards helping people understand resource requirements and resource limitations. When you share compensation data, include the total compensation picture in a cost per hour format. Often, people experience shock when they learn that benefits costs are often equal to or as much as 50% of their total wages. Stay union free best practice number 8. Change the daily conversations. What conversation sound bites do you hear at work? For example, it's a bad thing to hear the phrase, "not my job description," in the break room at any time, let alone on a regular basis. Frequently hearing blame being placed on people for problems provides another bad conversation example. This is one reason why frontline leadership is key to staying union-free. They must both listen to what people say and model the desired conversations. One way to do this is regularly engage all team members in a formal problem-solving effort. This could be as simple as a 30-minute brainstorming session during a downtime period. Plus, leaders should regularly request improvement ideas and actually put some of them into place. Better yet, they should redesign their own jobs to help stay in connection with their people and processes. Sadly, too many leaders only talk to their people when there's a problem. Don't let this be the case if you want to stay union-free. Expect leaders who consistently spend at least 70% of their work time with one or more of their people. Define leader standard work plans to help facilitate a change in how time is spent each day at work. Well, that's it for the best practices. As far as union certification goes, I personally don't think management should waste their time with attempts to decertify a union that is in place. Instead, they should make every effort possible to identify, prioritize, and improve the key workforce dissatisfiers exist. It's also key to build a strong labor management relationship with the chief steward, the shop stewards, the local president, the BA, the business agent. I know time limits exist and time's not available to go after all these strategies, but prioritize. Go after your big dissatisfiers first. Remember, unions existing today are often artifacts of past management practices. Many times, current leadership manages in a totally different way than those managers who were in the organization when the union first formed. It has just not been worth the effort to decertify. Conversely, if union leadership refuses to cooperate even when management does its best, decertification attempts might become value added. It all depends. Will there ever be a union-free future? I firmly believe that companies become organized because they deserve it. People devote most of their waking hours to their job. As leaders, we should follow the golden rule. Treat each other as we would like to be treated. Status, ethnicity, experience, gender, job title, or even location of birth should not determine if someone can be involved in workplace change efforts, if someone can be a leader, if someone can have a certain role, if someone can contribute. Everyone is good at something. Give everyone a chance to contribute in some way. We forget our history. Time erases our memories of how bad management once was. And when I say once was, just little over 100 years have passed since the Triangle Shirtworks fire in New York City. Only 70 years have passed since Andrew Carnegie turned George Frick loose on rioters in front of his steel plants. A massive, unexplainable compensation difference still exists in the United States today between executives and frontline staff, between people and other people. I've worked with unions that caused me no issue. I've also worked in non-union workplaces that are great places to be. I can help my team achieve operational excellence with a union in place or without one. The union should not and is not the system constraint. However, the way we as leaders treat people at work each day is perhaps a constraint that is the most challenging to remove. Focus on building sound relationships, not staying union-free. People give you so much more at work each day than what your naked eye can see. Conversely, if they're dissatisfied, they will take more from your organization than you will ever know. It's not a threat. Just do a search on quiet quitting. It's simply the realities of how fairness, or the lack thereof, influences one's performance on the job each day at any organizational level. Workplaces that are fair, fun, and focused on excellence are possible. Plus, you can even find them and experience them if one looks hard enough. Unfortunately, they're just not the norm. Where is your workplace at today? What would your people say if we asked them the same question? Please check out the written article on LinkedIn. It's got some links to several of the references that I made during this podcast. It also has an advertisement for a couple of my live workshops that are coming up in early 2023. Feel free to message me with your thoughts or questions via LinkedIn. Send me an email at kevin@greatsystems.com. Check out the greatsystems.com website for more free resources. And please take a look at my amazon.com author page. For now, it's been a blast sharing these thoughts with you folks. Please keep improving.